Well, can I firstly acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, the traditional owners on whose land we're meeting today, and pay my respects to their elders, both past and present and future, and to recognise the traditional owners. I'm Tom Kelmer, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner and the National Race Discrimination Commissioner with HERIOC, and we're hosting this seminar. And it's part of our normal human rights legal bulletin seminar series, and today we're particularly looking at the Northern Territory emergency response legislation. We have a couple of eminent speakers who I'll introduce a little bit later, but firstly Olga Havnen from the coordinator of the Combined Aboriginal Organisations of the Northern Territory, and Dr. Sarah Pritchard, who's a human rights lawyer, and also a barrister down here. The proceedings, and can I just also indicate that there are a number of media here in the audience today, we wanted to keep it fairly informal. We'll have a number of presentations, and then we'll go into a sort of a question and answer. There will be a roving microphone coming around, so when the time comes, if you could just make sure you introduce yourself and wait for the microphone, because what we're endeavouring to do on this occasion is to record the proceedings and then put them up on our website as an MP3 podcast for downloading, because there was a lot of interest from both people in Sydney who couldn't make it because we told them that we had a full house, as well as people nationally who are interested. As I said, we're going to be talking today and hearing from Sarah and Olga, and we're going to be discussing the legislation that underpins what the government has termed the emergency response in the Northern Territory. And can I start by also thanking you all for attending. As a Social Justice Commissioner, I've had much to say about the measures introduced in the Northern Territory and will no doubt continue to have much to say. I believe that it's important that all governments acknowledge the serious challenges that face our communities, our Indigenous communities, and the challenges that face dealing with child abuse and family violence. To the extent that the Northern Territory measures put these issues on the table and commit to addressing these issues within our communities, the measures are to be welcomed. That said, there are some serious concerns about the Commonwealth's approach and the legislation that underpins it. In particular, I'm troubled by the description by the government of how these measures relate to Australia's human rights obligations. Sarah and Olga will no doubt flesh out these concerns, and if they don't, I'm sure you'll ask them the appropriate questions to flesh them out. But there are four major concerns from my perspective, so I'll start today by laying them out in brief. Firstly, I'm concerned at the suggestion that by stating that the measures are intended to advance the rights of the child, this somehow makes it permissible to discriminate on the basis of race. There can never be a justification for racial discrimination. It is a peremptory norm of international law, meaning that it is a principle that cannot be violated under any circumstances. On the 10th of August 2007, HERIOC made a written and an oral submission to the Senate Standing Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs on the Northern Territory legislation. We stressed in that submission that all measures should be consistent with the rights to racial equality. HERIOC commented on the provisions of the NT legislation, and we particularly stated A, that the measures contained within the constitute a special measure, and we also commented on that if they don't, they should what the government said, that they should be valid irregardless. We noted that the mere fact that you state that something is a special measure does not make it so. You must justify that you meet the criteria of a special measure as laid out in international conventions, and particularly the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. Our submission noted that the measures to constitute special measures require effective consultation with the Indigenous peoples. We also recommended that a review mechanism be established to ensure proper monitoring and reporting and to avoid a range of potential unintended negative consequences arising from the measures. This is again essential for special measures, which must remain in review or under review at all times and only in place for as long as they need to be and that need is justified. The Commission also noted its opposition to the NT measures being exempt from the Race Discrimination Act. Put simply, if they cannot be justified as non-discriminatory, then the measures are inappropriate and should not be enacted. Second, many of the provisions of the Convention of the Rights of the Child have been cited by the Government and the NT Task Force as underpinning the intervention. However, I'm yet to see a description of that convention that relates to the intervention to the fundamental principles that undermine all of the rights recognised in the convention. This includes principles such as non-discrimination, recognition of the role of the family as a fundamental unit of society, the best interests of the child as a primary consideration, and the involvement of the child in the decisions. We have instead been given a rather shallow interpretation of the convention, and I don't believe that will hold up to international scrutiny. The link between removing permits and compulsory acquisition of land and the rights of the child has been tenuous at best. Instead, the rights of the child have been used as a shield to deflect any criticism of the Northern Territory measures, regardless of how sensible or important these criticisms are. My third concern is a simple one. Human rights law places a high value on the rights to participate in decision making. The lack of consultation on these measures is extremely concerning. It is also not consistent with democratic principles. A number of MPs admitted during the debates on the legislation that, given its volume, they hadn't had time to read it. And yet it was passed without any real chance for input, particularly inputs from Indigenous Australians. It is polite for me to put this right as one of effective participation. I really should be talking of it as a right to self-determination and of requiring the free, prior and informed consent of Indigenous peoples. This is what the declaration, not the draft declaration, but the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People states. That declaration was adopted last Thursday by the United Nations General Assembly after more than 20 years of deliberation. It was adopted with just four countries opposing it. This is an extraordinary result, I think, and it is worth recalling that even the United Nations Universal Declaration on Human Rights did not enjoy such broad support when it was enacted. Now, Articles 18 and 19 of the Declaration state, Article 18, Indigenous peoples have the right to participate in decision making in matters which would affect their rights through representatives chosen by themselves in accordance with their own procedures, as well as to maintain and develop their own Indigenous decision making institutions. And Article 19 says, states shall consult and cooperate in good faith with the Indigenous peoples concerned through their own representative institutions in order to obtain their free, prior and informed consent before adopting and implementing legislative or administrative measures that may affect them. And finally, my fourth concern relates to the description of the Northern Territory measures as an emergency or a crisis. This does not overcome the need for governments to comply with human rights obligations, and that's important. I think that it's worth looking at in terms of Article 4 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which sets out strict criteria to be adopted in times of public emergency. In brief, this provision enables some of the human rights obligations set out in the Covenant to be not met, but only in the following circumstances: where it involves public emergency which threatens the life of the nation. Secondly, the emergency is officially proclaimed. Third, the restriction on rights imposed is strictly required by the situation. Fourth, the restriction must not be inconsistent with other provisions in international law. Fifth, they may not involve discrimination solely based on race. 6, they must not breach certain provisions of the covenant. And finally, the intention to enact emergency measures must be communicated to all other members of the treaty, and there's other member states of the treaty, through the United Nations General Secretary. This is clearly not the situation in the Northern Territory, and yet the claim of an emergency is being used to avoid a broad range of human rights obligations in a manner that I consider is inappropriate. Now, I look forward to hearing from Olga and Sarah about the complexities of the legislation and its human rights implications, and particularly from Olga as to how she sees it on the ground in the Northern Territory. So without further ado, can I call upon Olga to come to the podium? But before she rushes up, let me tell you something about Olga. Don't panic. Olga and I go back a long way, and in fact Olga's mother and I worked together in the early 80s. Olga comes from Tennant Creek in the Northern Territory. She has spent most of her life in the Territory and has held various roles with government and non-government sectors, principally in the area of Indigenous policy, advocacy and human rights. She was a former Deputy Director of the Northern Land Council. She's also held other governmental positions, including Principal Policy Advisor to the Department of the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory and the Indigenous Policy or Indigenous Programs Manager for the Fred Hollows Foundation. She is a board member of the Australian Council of Social Services and the Diplomacy Training Program. And in her early days, she worked for the Aboriginal Development Corporation in the Northern Territory and in other places. So she comes with a long history of engagement and working with Indigenous Australians. She is currently working in a voluntary position as coordinator of the Combined Aboriginal Organisations of the Northern Territory in response to the federal government's emergency intervention legislation. So, Olga, please.